We're glad to see everyone tonight. I trust you're all reasonably comfortable. I know quite a few are fairly tightly packed in, so we trust you'll bear with it for the next 50 minutes if you can. We're glad to see you on the two nights remaining. You'll get a double mark. You get a very special mark for coming tomorrow night, and then things drop back to be ordinary again on Friday. So we trust that you'll remember that and keep the two meetings in mind in the will of the Lord. Now, we are reading in the first book of Kings tonight, and first of all in chapter 3. First Kings and chapter 3. And verse 3, 1 Kings 3, verse 3. And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father. Only he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar. In Gibeon the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." And then we, verse 9, this is his prayer, "Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people?" And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, "Because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment, behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honour, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days." Now, at the end of the chapter, we have, from verse 16, we have the two women with the child that died and the living child. And Solomon decides the question, verse 28, "And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment." Now, chapter 4 and verse 29, "And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country, and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all men, and Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman, and Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mael, and his fame was in all nations round about. And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005, and he spake of the trees from the cedar tree that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beasts, and of fowl, and of creeping things, and of fishes. And there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all kings of the earth, which had heard of his wisdom." Now just over to chapter 10 for a short reading. Verse 23. "So King Solomon exceeded all the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. And all the earth sought to Solomon to hear his wisdom, which," here we have it, "God had put in his heart." Now, I know that's enough for reading, but just the book of Proverbs, for just three short things that I want to mention, perhaps. Proverbs chapter 1. Verse 7, Proverbs 1, verse 7. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Now, chapter 15. Closing verse, verse 33. "The fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility." And then the end of the book, chapter 31. The end of the chapter again. Verse 30, favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. And that will cover us for reading and for what I have in mind to say tonight. In the first book of Samuel, chapter 10, towards the end of that chapter, there's Saul has just been acclaimed king by Samuel the prophet, and he makes his way home to the village of Gibeah. And we are told that there went with him a band of men whose heart the Lord had touched. Now that little expression would really form a title if I wanted one for the meetings this week, because we are thinking in these meetings about a band of men whose heart the Lord touched. And it is our hope. Maybe we are being too optimistic, but it is our hope that before the week is over, we'll have joined the band, and that the Lord also might have touched our hearts, because we need our hearts touched. We have a serious cardiac problem in these days. We have all kinds of artery blockages, and we have all kinds of valve failure, and we have all kinds of cavity collapses, and we have serious thrombosis, and we are eating a diet, many of us, that is very, very high in spiritual cholesterol, so that there is a serious cardiac problem. And it's only the Lord himself can touch and grant the cure that would make the difference for us. A band of men whose heart the Lord touched. It's amazing, out of the hundreds of times that the word heart is used in the Bible, getting away up, well, just depends on readings and that, but between 800 and 900 times heart, you could nearly count on two hands the number of times that it refers to the pump in here. It scarcely ever refers to the physical heart. It's nearly always time and 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 time again, the word heart is being used for that chamber, that secret chamber of internal consciousness. It's the chamber where our emotions circulate, some of them cold, some of them warm. It's the laboratory where our thoughts are processed. It's the internal room where decisions are formulated. And what happens at that central chamber of our personality? It goes out through the whole business. So that heart care, in the spiritual sense, not the physical heart, but the personality and the psychological heart, heart care in the Bible is a tremendously important subject. It's no wonder that in the book of Proverbs, in chapter 4, somewhere in there, about verse 23, we are exhorted to keep thine heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. I like Mr. Darby's rendering of that verse. I'm just quoting from memory. I mightn't be giving you the exact words, but near enough. He said, keep thine heart more than anything that is guarded, for out of it are the issues of life. That is, you station. You should station, and so should I, station at my heart's door a number of strong soldiers. The soldier of honesty. The soldier of charity. The soldier of integrity. So that those soldiers like sentinels would guard the door. Well, you say, why do you need to guard your heart? Do you need to guard your heart for what is coming in? Maybe. But you also need to guard the heart for what is coming out. And if I have those soldiers positioned, and there's anything comes into my heart that is contrary to righteousness and love and integrity, those soldiers will say, no admittance, sir. And within the cavities of my heart, if I engineer some ill feeling or some malicious word or some devious act, as soon as that goes to come out, those soldiers will say, "No, sir, you don't get out." Keep thine heart more than anything that is guarded, for out of it are the issues of life. I like Helen Spurrell's translation of that last part of the verse. She says, "For out of it flow life's action." That's the point. What you hear me say, where you see me go, and how you hear me speak is here. It's not just action, and it's not just words, and it's not just movement, it's heart. Because what comes out of it are the issues of life. So that we're advised to be very, very protective of our internal and our heart condition. Dear brother, can I ask you to examine your heart? Every one of us, right from this wall to the gallery there. Is there any brother here and you have malicious thoughts towards any other brother in your heart? Is there any sister here and you have jealous thoughts toward any other sister and malicious feelings? Now may God help us to do a little bit of heart ransacking. Because it's needed. It's needed, as I've said on quite a number of nights, we're living in a superficial age. You know the whole craze and the whole cry in the world for image. As long as image is all right, keep it nicely, keep it cosmetic. Keep it looking well. Keep it nice on the outside. Make sure the facade is pleasing and pleasant. But don't worry about the back bit. And living in a world like that, of course, the possibility is that we could be affected by the same kind of philosophy. And so long as I look well, it's all right. But God is looking for a deeper thing. Well, here we are tonight. The man that wrote that verse, actually, that I've just been making a good bit of, in Proverbs chapter 4, is the man who's our subject tonight. It tells us concerning Solomon that all the earth, here's a man made a worldwide impact. Here's a man touched the world on an international sphere. You know why? It says, all the earth, they came to hear the wisdom that God had put in this man's heart. It wasn't wisdom that was naturally generated. It wasn't wisdom that was secular. It wasn't wisdom that was learned in the colleges and classrooms and cloisters of men. This was wisdom which the Bible says God put in Solomon's heart, and the whole world couldn't help but notice it, and they were coming in droves. In days when travel was difficult, there were people traveling over 1,000 miles to hear him. 1,000 miles. You see, if a person gets wisdom into his heart, there's no knowing where it'll end. And there's no knowing what influence and good effect it might be. You see, there's something we don't need to get into our hearts because we were born with it. There's a verse somewhere in the Bible, and it could have been Solomon that wrote it as well. And he said that folly is bound in the heart of a child. So that we don't need to be taught folly. We don't need to be taught folly. We are experts in folly. Educated by the folly of the garden. We've all become experts in folly. As the Apostle Paul reflected upon the pre-conversion condition, he says, "We ourselves were sometimes foolish." Dear brothers and sisters, we take a look back for 10 seconds in a ministry meeting. Take a look back. We could hardly believe that there were nights we went to bed and slept like innocent people in the very lid of hell. As foolish as the devil could make us. And the breaking of the thread, and we were gone forever. We were fools of the highest order. Thank God for conversion's day, when a bit of spiritual sense broke us down in the presence of God and sent us to trust the one who's the embodiment of all wisdom, the glorious Christ. We were sometimes foolish. But the problem is the foolishness that was ingrained in our nature as depraved children of Adam. Even with conversion, some of the grains can carry through still. So that we need to get this wisdom. Now, we have a great unfolding here in these passages as to how this man got the wisdom. How he got it. And then we're told about what effect it had and all that, and what the change it made in his life, and how people noticed it. So that we'll go through some of this, and we'll take a look at some of the principles of this wisdom that God put in the heart of Solomon. Now, the first thing that I would mention, maybe, and it's a self-evident thing, that the man who got this wisdom recognized right away that he didn't have it and he needed it. He asked for it. He asked for it. He said, when the Lord gave him the blank check and gave him the open offer, whatever you ask, I'll give you. He says, Lord, give me wisdom. I would dearly say that one of the greatest marks of wisdom is to know that you don't have it. You know, a fool will imagine he's wise when he's not. But a man who knows he's not wise and begins to ask God for it, by the very fact of acknowledging he doesn't have it, he's already showing it. So there's a bit of a mix-up and a conundrum for you. He recognized, now he says, I need this wisdom. Now maybe I should spend just a minute or two, saying what wisdom is, because that'll be very important. Now, wisdom, well, I'll more or less define it now, and then I'll work around it a little bit. Wisdom in the Old Testament sense, and in the New Testament too, wisdom but in the Old Testament sense, is that capacity to manage life for the glory of God. Now that sounds very simple. Wisdom is a spiritual capacity to manage life for the glory of God. That's it, down to the very, very bare bones. Now, wisdom is not knowledge. It's not knowledge. You know, just to draw an instance from life, you know there are men who are absolutely brilliant. They have degrees in lista lente or art. They have gone through the academia and they have climbed the ladder into heights of intellect and so on, and they're just nothing short of gigantic intellects, and they're brain boxes. But they have no wisdom. No wisdom at all. Some of them have broken marriages, and some of them have bankruptcies, and some of them have this, that, and the other. But they've brains to burn, but no wisdom. So that wisdom is more than knowledge. Wisdom is not just information. Wisdom is insight. Being able to look into the thing and being able to see that's the way to do it. Wisdom is not just IQ and education. It's ethics. Wisdom is not just something philosophical and propositional. Wisdom is practical. So that if I have wisdom in the Bible sense, wisdom will enable me to cope with life's crisis. Wisdom will enable me to control life's circumstances. And wisdom will enable me to classify life's choices. Wisdom will help me in my business. Wisdom will help me in my home. If I'm a parent bringing up children, wisdom. If I'm an overseer in the assembly, wisdom. If I'm a husband, if I'm a wife, wisdom. Because remember, I say again, wisdom is the know-how, the know-what, the know-where, and the know-when of life. If I have wisdom, I know what to say. I know where to go. I know when to speak. I know how to act. Now, when I've just said that, of course, you know, dear Christians, and I'm not being critical, like we're a blundering crowd. We're a blundering crowd. Look at how many decisions. Look at how many decisions I might have made in life. And just with a spoonful of wisdom, I would never have made them. Look at how many things you have said. And just with 2 ounces of wisdom, you would never have said them. Look at how many business deals you have got involved in. And with an egg cup full of wisdom, you'd have left them alone. You see, I can say this, that every failure in our practical lives, and I'm not throwing stones at you because every stone I would throw and hit you, it would produce 10 to come back at me. But every failure that we make in our practical lives, the way we do things and when we do them and how we do them and where we go, all those practical blunders, now every one of them springs from a lack of wisdom. So we're not a bit surprised when Solomon, the Lord gave Solomon this open invitation to ask for anything. He says, Lord, he says, you have just made me a king in the room of my father David. And he says, I look upon this great big empire. And he says, the people in this empire, they're as many as the sand of the sea. And he said, I'm asking that you give me wisdom. Because, he said, I need to know what decisions to make. And then he says, Lord, he says, into the bargain, he says, not only am I over a great empire with a great number of duties and with a great number of decisions, but he says, I'm very young. Now, let us think about this for a minute or two. Here's a boy, he may have been 20, and if he was 20, he wasn't much over it. And landing on his shoulders is the responsibility of administering this great kingdom that his father David has left him. He wonders, he says, now for life's development, he said, here I am, just a young person, and for life's development, and for life's duties, and for life's decisions, he says, I need wisdom. Can I speak to young people here tonight? If there are some here tonight in their teens, and maybe you're just beginning to go to university, or maybe you're in your early 20s, it's third level education, maybe it's courtship, just a little bit down the line, you're beginning to think about it already, it's career. Can I say one of the things that you need will be wisdom? Because you have big decisions to make. And the decisions that you make in your late teens or 20s, remember, they will be digging out channels in which the rest of your life will run. And some of those teen and 20 decisions, if you make the wrong one, it'll be too late to change them in your 40s. Wisdom. Wisdom for life's decisions. He says, Lord, he said, here's a vast empire of thy so great a people. And he said, I know every decision I make is going to affect tens of thousands of people. So he said, in making these decisions, I have to ask and not only think about myself, but he says, I have to think about how it not, what's this to talk about in the world? Is it the knock-on effect or something? He says, it's going to ripple right through the kingdom. Right through the 12 tribes, right across the empire. It was, you know, dear Christian, I can tell you this. Every decision you make, it not only touches you, but it touches others. Some of you young brethren here, do you see that decision you make about a wife? Who will be your marriage companion? You have to think well about that. Because that will affect you. That will touch your family. That will affect her. That will affect her family. Should there be children, that will affect your children. And just drawing that out of the hat, as one particular instance of a choice that a person has to make, and it ripples on and on and on and on. May God help us to have caution in our choices. We need wisdom. Now he says, Lord, he says, I'm asking you for this. And he says, I feel that this wisdom is very, very greatly required. Maybe I should move on and not only speak about Solomon's wisdom required, but I have been saying a little bit about this, and I'll just emphasize it a little further. Solomon's wisdom requested. You know, Solomon knew there was something he needed, but thank God he got it in the right place. If I want this wisdom that will enable me to guide a kingdom, well, you say, sure, I have no kingdom to guide. I'm all right, your details. It doesn't apply to me. It doesn't apply to me, eh? You have a good bit of management to do. You see, every person in this meeting has a management of at least 2 and 5 and 168. So you have a big empire to look after. 2, 5, 168. And you bungle any one of them, your life will bear the inscription, folly. 2, body and soul. 5, my 5 senses. A lot of people can't control their eyes and their ears and tongues. 168, 24 of them in every day, and 7 of those 24, 168 hours. How am I managing my body? How am I managing my senses and my faculties? How am I managing my time? Some of you brothers and sisters, parents, how are you managing your family? Some of the overseers here tonight, how are you getting on with the care of the assembly? You know, every one of us, every one of us, from the most private Christian here, and if you pardon, the most ordinary Christian here, if there's any, from the most ordinary to the most renowned Christian in this meeting tonight, every one of us is the manager of a big empire. And the revenues of that empire will carry over into eternity. So we need, oh, says Solomon, he says, Lord, I require this wisdom. And he came. There were big schools down in Egypt, and they produce some scholars, I can tell you. Well, now Solomon, if you would take a month off and go down there and enroll in one of the ethic courses down in the Egyptian College of Pharaoh, it'll be a great help to you at all. Solomon knew that this wisdom that I need, I can't get it in a secular school of earth. Where did he get this? He got this wisdom in the sanctuary at Gibeon. Oh, I love that. You know, it says, and I'll not stay with this, it says that Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings. God came to his door. He says, Solomon, what do you want? He says, look, he says, I've seen it. I've counted them. 996, 997, 998, 1,000. He said, there's a man prepared to give everything for me. God says, what do you want? He says, I'll give it. You know, I'm convinced, I might be wrong, brother, that God's answers to many of our prayers are in proportion to our gifts to him. And maybe the reason that we are not getting the big answers is because our worship is very scanty. He was an offering man, a worshipping man. It said he was walking in the commandments of the Lord. He was an obedient man. And God says, I'll give this to you. And there in the sanctuary, dear believer, listen, there's a lovely verse. I'll bring it right in from the New Testament just now. There's a man called James. If he was here listening to what, he wouldn't be listening, I can tell you, he was doing the preaching. But if he was here tonight and he heard what I had been on, or he would say, he would get up after me and he would say, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask God, who giveth to all men liberally. Now, if there's any Christian here tonight, and you, I don't know what difficulties there might be in life. I don't know what decisions might be. I do not know what duties you have to carry out. This man had plenty of them. But I would say this. You might feel you can't cope, and you might feel you hardly know what choice to make. Now, it's nice to ask advice of spiritual people. But remember, I would encourage you to ask the Lord himself. If any man lacked wisdom, that's how Solomon got the wisdom. It came from God. He opened his heart. That's how God put this wisdom into the man's heart, because the man opened his heart with burnt offerings and with prayer. And he turned heavenward just like one of those sunflowers that opens towards the sun. And as the sun smiles upon the sunflower, God could see an open heart. And he said into the heart of that man that's asking, he says, he knows he needs it, and I will give it to him. So that he had wisdom and skill now for all of these decisions. I want to speak just for a quick second again on Solomon's wisdom revealed. You know, he hadn't long got this wisdom until it was tested. How was it revealed? Now, what will I need wisdom for? And what will you need wisdom for? Well, these two women, we'll not go into the details of the story. There's quite a bit in this story. The two women, I suppose everybody knows it. You know, the two ladies that had the two children, the little babies. And one of them smothered the youngster, the infant, in the middle of the night. And when she discovered that she had smothered her little one, was dead, and put it in with the other lady and took the living one. And then they came to Solomon and so on and said, which is which? So Solomon's faced with it. Now, two-day-old infants, they all look the same, don't they? There's no evidence, there's no witnesses. Here are two women. There's one real, and there's one a professor. They both say, this child, this living child is mine. There's one of those women, that child's real mother. The other one is only a professed mother. And the first test of Solomon's wisdom is to distinguish reality from profession. I tell you, brethren, that's a big test of wisdom. I would say to the dear overseers here, men that have prayed for me and men that have encouraged me and coaxed me on and helped me and were very kind to me when they could have been otherwise. And I don't want to speak harshly to them or anything, but I would say to them all, you ask God for the wisdom to be a Bible teacher. No. You could be a Bible teacher with a minimum of wisdom. You ask God to have the wisdom to be able to tell what is real and what's only profession. Solomon brought, he says, bring the sword in. I tell you, the sword test soon sorted it out. Once you had the sore test, it soon revealed where the true affections were, and it soon disclosed that woman's false, and there's the real mother. The sore test still sorts things out. He says, well, divide it with a sword. There's a verse in the New Testament that says, the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Listen, let me leave that that I was speaking about. One of the biggest tests of wisdom is being able to decide what is sham and what is real. See the people in the world. Some nice enough people. They're just being absolutely deluded, and they're living their lives for sham. Some of them are going in for big houses. Some of them are going in for fame. Some of them are going in for money. And they think, if I can get this, I really have my hands on something that will be solid and real. And they're just grasping at phantoms. Dear brethren and sisters, may God give us the wisdom to get reality. Eternal realities. Things that are real, so that we not be fascinated by the false and by the fleeting. That we might have the wisdom. You know, it's a wise man. Is it? What's the... Our brother beside me here tells me that it came from William Secker. And the missionary man, he said, he's no fool. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Look at the million fools we have in the north of Ireland. They're grabbing with all their little energy to get a hold on things that they're going to have to let go some of these days. And the trouble is, we're amongst them.
May God help us to let go. Let go the passing illusion and the imaginary illusion of material things. Let them go. And with both our hands reach out for a firmer grip on things that we'll never have to relinquish. He is no fool. As Jim Elliot said, now, he taught, he had to decide, wisdom was revealed. Because it, showed, it says all Israel knew. The whole place heard about it. And they saw. They saw that the man that sits upon the throne, God has put wisdom in his heart because he can decide the difference between sham and what is real. I want to speak a little word or two, and we're getting on fairly well, a little word or two about the rating. Solomon's wisdom required. Solomon's wisdom requested. Solomon's wisdom revealed. Solomon's wisdom rated. We've read a beautiful little section here at the end of chapter 4. And it tells us in 1 Kings chapter 4 that the Lord had given Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much and largeness of heart as the sand that is on the seashore. That's a powerful statement. Mind you, it's what James said. When God gives, he gives liberally. I know it's a figurative expression. I know that. But he gave this man... Actually, I think there's a play, for it says that the number of people in Solomon's kingdom were as many as the sand on the seashore. That says that earlier in chapter 4. When you get down to where we are, it says that God gave him wisdom into his heart as much as the sand that is in the seashore. And I think that what we have been told is this, that God gave Solomon as much wisdom as would meet the need of every member of his kingdom. Dear brother, you care for the Lord's people. I believe God could give you as much wisdom. And so I don't know how the dear Brennan, they have things to face and questions to answer. I'm glad I haven't to answer them. These dear overseers, I hardly know how they cope, but I believe this, that God can give you enough wisdom if you seek Him for it, as will meet the need of every Christian within your care. That's what he did for Solomon. Largeness of heart, it couldn't be measured. Exceeding much wisdom, it was rated. As far as its quality, and then as far as its quality was concerned, it says that Solomon exceeded all the men of the east. Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of the children of the east country. He was wiser than all men. Then it mentions these three or four men. In its scope, in its superiority, and in its subjects, it says he could talk about the three. From the cedar to the hyssop. And he could talk about the birds. And he could talk about the beasts of the field. And he could speak about animals. And there wasn't a subject. He was a forester. And he was a botanist. And an ornithologist. And a zoologist. And an ichthyologist. Whatever you wanted to talk about, Solomon had it all. And there wasn't a man like him. Just with his wisdom. You know... Now let me broaden the subject here for just a second. You see, this whole subject of wisdom, it was very, very... There's not too much made of it. Now, there are references to it. But there is not too much made of this subject before this stage in the kingdom, in the Bible. And I think it's very significant that... Because God was giving this man a revelation of this wisdom to know how to organize life and to handle life. And like you'll agree, dear brethren and sisters, that life is a challenge for us all. Like there's not a man. Some of you men are wise men, I would admit that because I know you well. But I don't think there's a man in this meeting would get up and say, take a look at my life. I have coordinated it well, and I have coped well with it, and I'm in control of all the things, and there's no circumstance, there's no trauma, there's no tragedy, there's no trial finds me short-handed. I have wisdom for it all. There's no. But Solomon had that wisdom, and he needed it. You see, when you get to the days of Solomon, things became very, very complicated. Prior to the era of these golden days of the monarchy, the kingdom of Israel was more or less maybe overstating it, but it was more or less a simple little kingdom. When after David's day was over and Solomon came to the throne, the kingdom just blossomed and it became an international empire. They were doing trading with as far away over as India. And they were doing trading away over in the western direction as far as Spain. And into the land of Palestine, there were travellers coming. They were going. Other people were coming. And the wealth was pouring in like nobody's business until the stones, silver was no more counted. Palestine's a very stony country. And they were drinking their vessels, drinking out of golden vessels. I don't know how you feel like taking a drink of Coca-Cola out of a golden vessel. I see the brethren have given me a glass here that says Club Orange on it, but nevertheless, they're moving in the right direction, I suppose, when they're putting up the glass tonight. Right, well, there they had it all. Now God says, look, he says, I'll tell you, he says, do you see with all these international contacts? And he says, do you see with all this material wealth pouring in? He says, these people are going to need wisdom. Now listen, dear brothers and sisters, that's exactly where we are in the Western world. Now, our brethren always needed wisdom. We'll take the good Christians at Bleary, say, in 1903. There weren't too many of them at a car. Many homes here have two. Like my own home. There weren't too many of them had a computer. There are not many homes here don't have a computer. Some of you even as far gone as to be on the web. If they don't allow you television, I don't know what that'll do. There weren't too many of them had flown to America. Not to speak of Australia. We have done it all. Life's complicated. We are wallowing in materialism. We can go so far. We are international people. We can contact. We have information. We have contacts. We have communication with email and all. We are living in a complex web of a very, very highly active and technological age. And I tell you, Solomon was just the same, and he needed wisdom. You see, younger folks here, you're going to need wisdom. It'll be wisdom now that you'll need to know when just to log off. You'll need wisdom to say no more socialising on such and such a night. It's going to be a Bible study. You need wisdom to see a relationship developing that won't please the Lord, and you'll have to say no further. I'll have to cut the stick here. What amazes me is, I was talking about the 20s there, I'm deviating a little now, but I was speaking about Solomon in his 20s. You know, it amazes me the maturity that I can see in some young people. See, older Christians here tonight, we respect you. But frankly, many of you older believers who are an example to us, you have little or no idea what you younger believers in the assembly have to contend with. And they're saying no with conviction to things that you never had to face. And they're battling with forces. And they're wrestling with temptations that you never knew. And can I say, you encourage them all and make the assembly as comfortable for them as you can. And you build them up with good body of Bible teaching. Because some of those young people have done well. And the maturity of their decision, well, it's just great. I'll tell you what I'm equally amazed at. Some of the older Christians, I'm amazed at the immaturity and the childishness of their decisions and the lack of wisdom in things that they do and all that, and I'm ashamed of some of the lack of wisdom in some of my own things. I admit all of that, but here's a man now, and he has this great wisdom in the midst of a materialistic, complicated age, and God gave this wisdom just when it was needed. And blessed be his name, he has it still. And we can get it for the challenges of our present day. Now, in Solomon's time, I've hinted at this already, there was quite a bit of wisdom. Now, wisdom, this was one of the, I suppose I could call it one of the buzzwords of the ancient world. Everybody talked about their wisdom. Well, we have got our wisdom. We have got our wise men, and we have got our wise books, and we have got our scholars, and we have got our students, and we have got our wisdom. And Solomon's wisdom, and I want you to know, I'm going to be lapping ahead, for I have to keep moving. I'm talking about the rating of Solomon's wisdom better than the rest. I want to think of the record of Solomon's wisdom, because it didn't only get into Solomon's heart. Thank God it came out in Solomon's hand. And we have the record of his wisdom in the book of Proverbs. And we can recommend. Again, it was a brother on my left here. I heard recommending the reading of the book of Proverbs many years ago. I didn't just follow it through the way he said. He told us then that to do well for a chapter a day. I haven't followed it through, but I can certainly recommend it, for I have read it. And the wisdom of God through Solomon in the book of Proverbs cannot be surpassed, even though we are living 3,000 years later. It has been recorded. Now, there were other wisdoms. It mentions here, you remember it says about Moses that he was schooled in the wisdom of the Egyptians. So the Egyptians had wisdom. We have read here a verse that talks about the wisdom of the East. That's not Egypt, that's Mesopotamia. Or what we call the Babylonians. Remember Daniel and all the wise men of Babylon. Remember when the Lord Jesus was born, that they said the wise men came from the east. And then you remember that Paul said the Greeks seek after wisdom. So Babylon, Egypt, Greece, Israel. So, good man Solomon, when you write this book of Proverbs, you're going into a very competitive world. There are quite a number of fellows have claimed the ground before you. The book of Proverbs is not the first book of Proverbs to be written, but it's the only inspired book. Now, tell me this. What was it governed the wisdom of the Babylonians? What was it governed the wisdom of the Egyptians? What was it governed the wisdom of the Greeks? You'll have to think now. I don't know what time this meeting is going to be over at, but there's no sign of it yet. I don't know. The wisdom of the Babylonians, they were stargazers. And depending on the movement of the constellations, they said this is how you should act. And there was never a Babylonian newspaper published that didn't have the horoscope on the front page. The wisdom of the Babylonians was astrological or astronomical. And a good bit of magic involved in it as well. What about the wisdom of the Egyptians? No, the Egyptians weren't stargazing boys. The Egyptians had a whole lot of myths and stories. Myths about creation. That thing there, Amenhotep and Amenemope, the manuscripts, you'll see them in the British Museum, and some of them even in the Chester Beatty Museum down in Dublin. They talked about the myths of their gods and a whole lot of old balderdash. But that was behind, and they produced their wisdom books. It wasn't magical, it was mythological. What about the Greeks? What kind of wisdom did they have? Well, of course, they glorified this. They said, we're not going to be worried about myths. And we're not going to be worried about magic and the stars. And that. We are going to reason it out ourselves. And we are going to come to a conclusion on the result of our own brain power. So that the Babylonians, they were magical. The Egyptians were mythological and the Greeks were philosophical. And now, what I need to say is this, that no three of them are gone yet. You don't believe it, I know, or maybe I don't know all about it. We have a great number of people, and they still guide their life according to what the stars say. I've been asked questions about this, and I could go into the things of the zodiac and all that. I don't want to go into it just now, but I would say to every Christian here, never you even read that old catalogue in the paper. Never even read it. Now, there are many people, they wouldn't start out a day. That's the wisdom of the Babylonians. We put a dumper on that right away. Then the myths and the fancy stories. No. And then the philosophy, just human reason, and the glorification of man's brains. And we'll sort out our own problems, and give us the equation, and we'll do it. We'll do it ourselves. That's the pride of Greek philosophy. No, we can't go along that line. That's the big intellectual word. There are hundreds of them in Northern Ireland tonight. They would absolutely at us gathered here in a simple gospel hall listening to the word of God. They say, listen to a book that's 2,000 years plus old. You're fools. You have to get up and think with the modern age. I was saying in the meeting last night, dear brethren, that the Bible's not only abreast of the times, the Bible's beyond the times. We need never let this book go. How does Solomon's wisdom differ? That's why I read those three verses from the book of Proverbs. At the start of the book of Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. At the spot bang on the middle of the book of Proverbs, the fear of the Lord. Right at the end of the book of Proverbs, favor is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. The fear of the Lord, the fear of the Lord, the fear of the Lord. Dear brethren, I would say to us all, old and young, men and women alike, if I want to know in my life what way I should go, I don't consult the stars. I don't depend on fabricated stories. I don't depend on human philosophy. The thing that can guide every Christian and makes a man wise is the fear of the Lord in a Christian's heart. So that whatever I'm going to do, I bring the Lord into it. Come on now, brother, that business deal that you're just about to, have you brought the Lord into it? You go into the book of Proverbs that I'm referring to, the record of Solomon's wisdom. What amazed me in reading the book of Proverbs is that there's hardly a mention of the temple in it. It's talking about the street, and it's talking about the market, and it's talking about the shop, and it's talking about the family, and it's talking about personal life, and it doesn't mention the temple. You know, we would all love to be wise men in the whole. Listen, brother, this is not just wisdom for the platform, and this is not just wisdom for the assembly, this is wisdom for marriage, this is wisdom that touches friendships, this is wisdom that touches money, this is wisdom that touches business dealings, so that the fear of the Lord, I can't, as you can see, the time's going well, and I can't elaborate it too much, the fear of the Lord, it's the beginning of wisdom. I say again, as we almost close the meeting, I do not know what stage of life you may be at. I do not know what decisions are pressing upon you just now. But I'll say, just bring the Lord into it. You know, right throughout the book of Proverbs, he tells us 11 times about things that are an abomination to the Lord. And 3 of those 11 times, it's divers weights and a false balance. You say, sure, have a bit of sense, man. What are you talking about? What does the Lord care what weight I use when I'm weighing out the sugar? What does the Lord care? The great Jehovah! What does he care what length of a measure I do when I'm cutting the cloth for my customers? He cares so much that 3 times the wisest man says that a false balance is an abomination to the Lord. Maybe we haven't been as wise as we should be. I was reading there lately about a lady rushed into the butcher shop, and if you're a butcher, this is, I'm not reached into the butcher shop just almost a stopping time, and she had visitors had come, and she said to the man, she said, "Look, I want you to have your 4-pound chicken." She says, "I'm sorry to come so late, but just a visitor's coming." And he says, "I'm sorry." He says, "That's the only one there. That's only 3.25. It's only 3 1/4 pound. And she says, "I'll have to go on." He says, "I think I might have one in the back. I think just hold a second." So he slipped into the back, took the label off, put on the 4 pound, brought it in. "There's a 4 pound. Just found one." "Oh," she says, "I'm glad. I appreciate your help." But at least, she says, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just take the both of them." You see, when you cut the... it was a very foolish thing, wasn't it? Very foolish thing. I tell you, it's only a story now, I tell you, but if you do that, dear brother, more foolish still before the judgment seat. Oh, just for wisdom, the fear of the Lord. Would I do certain things in my home life if I had the fear of the Lord? Would I make that decision? Would I go to that place if I had the fear of the Lord? Oh, the folly, the epitome of folly is just to leave the Lord out of it. May God give us that reverential fear, not the dread of a tyrant, but the reverential appreciation of the God who redeemed us and brought us to himself, the fear of the Lord. Solomon was the great man that recorded that wisdom. God put it in his heart. I'm glad it didn't stay there, because Solomon put it in part of the Bible. And I hope from God's heart to Solomon's heart, from Solomon's hand into the Bible, it will go to my eyes and your good eyes and get into every one of our hearts, so that it might be in our lives. I was going to speak about the recognition of Solomon's wisdom. Do you see this man who was so wise in his whole kingdom? You know what happened? There was a fellow way up in the north, a king, sent him a whole pile of stuff and said, "It's great." And there was a woman came away from the south. You say, "We can't get people in. We can't get people in." I wonder, have we acted so foolishly? All I say is, whatever was wrong with Solomon, when he acted wisely, he got people in. And he got people in from 1,000 miles away. Gentiles, heathen, pagans, that got to know the fame and the name of the Jehovah. You know, there was an attractiveness about his wisdom. And I'm reluctant to finish the meeting on a sad note, but I couldn't just leave it. It's not my subject really tonight, but I would just have to. Isn't it a shocking pity that this man, into whose heart the Lord put wisdom, and his wisdom touched the world. Isn't it an awful tragedy, brothers and sisters, that he became a foolish old man? He became a foolish old man. And he got things into his heart. And he married wives. And he acted a fool. And his associations and his actions and his companions and certain things that he did at the end of his life, the Bible tells us his wives turned away his heart. And do you see, when they turned away his heart, I'm just talking very down to earth now, when those ladies turned away Solomon's heart, you see the wisdom that God had put in his heart, I think it just poured out into the space. There came all kinds of folly. Mind you, because a man is wise in his youth, it's no guarantee of how he'll finish. May God keep us wise. Any of us could make a fool of ourselves. Just one slip. It only take one night. I could make a fool of my whole Christian testimony for whatever it's worth before this night is over. May God preserve us all, because we need wisdom when we're young. We need wisdom for the middle bit. We need wisdom for the senior year. We need wisdom to live with. We need wisdom to die with. Thank God he has plenty of it. He is the God of wisdom. We read in the Bible in there the other night that he's the only wise God. And he'll give it. And I hope that every one of us will be in his sanctuary, so that we may get the wisdom we need for life's duties, for life's demand, for life's decision.
and for life's dangers. May God touch our hearts and make us a little bit more characterized by Solomon's wisdom, shall we pray?